Hogwarts, Hogwarts, Hoggy Woggy Hogwarts, teach us.
Hello and welcome to Wizard Studies. I'm Audrey.
And I'm Katie.
And today, we are discussing Harry's favorite subject, but maybe the subject that they learned the least in over the years.
Yeah.
Defense Against the Dark Arts. They, like, really don't learn a lot in this class.
Yeah, and I feel like half the time we're in that class, it's, like, incompetent teaching as well.
Yeah. Yeah, which is why it, like, kind of seems like they don't learn a lot.
Yeah. Also, having a new professor every year probably doesn't help either.
No, I would say that's not the best for a student's education. Do you think that... Actually, we'll talk about this in a second. Yeah. Okay. So, our patron for the episode is Mark. Thanks, Mark. You're the best.
Thank you. I don't know. This is going to be a little bit of a tangent, but so you know, like, we're at that age where it's like we're adults, like we're like starting to become like real adults, like we're not just like 18-year-old adults, you know. We're like getting into the mid-20s now. Oh god, that makes me feel really old. But like, is it...
You don't know, like, what you're supposed to call your friend's parents?
Well, yeah, and just like adults in general, because like sometimes I'll refer to like... Like, while I was... The last job I worked, there was, like, a man that, like, came in and, like, was the a friend of my boss. And he, like, played in the pro-am that we worked. And I always called him, like, Mr. Scarborough. And, like, people made fun of me. And they were like, that's not his name. Like, call him by his first name. I was like, I don't know. Like, do I still say Mr. and Mrs.? Or do I call people by their first name?
I feel like I haven't been using Mr. and Mrs. for a while, but...
I don't know. I feel like I still do. It makes me uncomfortable to call adults by their first name. I don't know. I feel like I'm not old enough yet to do that, but I definitely am.
Yeah, you definitely are.
Well, anyways, thank you so much, Mr. Moscato.
Mark.
Mark.
Announcements.
Yeah, we don't really have... many announcements, or really any announcements, but just wanted to put in your radar to stay tuned for a Deathly Hallows Part 2 watch along date. We are going to try and get that kind of as soon as possible whenever we figure out in our schedule when we're going to record it, so that you guys know as far ahead in advance as possible, so you can either plan for that or just forget about it entirely. Either one of those things is perfectly fine. And then also, there might be something in the works for something to do with Harry's birthday later in the month. But stay tuned for that.
No promises.
Yeah.
But, yeah. It's like, I guess this episode is coming out, like, the 20th. So you're like, oh, that's kind of close. Why haven't they planned anything? But we're recording it the 11th. So, like, we have a little bit more time.
Yeah. We're still figuring it out. We'll see what we can do about it.
Okay,
so let's get started here. So just some general info about Defense Against the Dark Arts in general. Defense Against the Dark Arts is one of the core subjects taught at both Hogwarts and Ilvermorny. And so one of, like, the core subjects just means that it's one of those classes that it's mandatory for students to take between their first year and their fifth year, because then after their fifth year is when they get to, like, build their schedules around what they want to pursue post-Hogwarts. So it is optional in sixth and seventh year.
Can I just say, I feel like, they make, like, everything becomes kind of optional in 6th and 7th year, which I don't really understand.
Yeah.
And I feel like something should remain mandatory.
Yeah, I feel like charms... I feel like charms especially. I could see why maybe transfiguration, like, that's kind of specific. Like, maybe not potions...
Yeah, because, like, how often are you going to make a potion?
Yeah.
But, like...
And I feel like potion, you could definitely, like, figure out... Like, you could learn what you needed to learn to, like, function between 1 and 5. You know, between years 1 and 5.
Yeah.
I know.
But, like, I feel like Defense Against the Dark Arts, Especially in the time that they lived in.
Yeah, definitely in the time that they lived in. But yeah, I definitely feel like maybe I could also see History of Magic being mandatory as well, just because, I don't know, like, relating it to, like, Muggle schooling. Like, you take history. Like, history's at a liberal arts college anyways. I don't know about, like, specific colleges. But, like, history is still a subject that you have to take classes for in college. Yeah. You know? And you take it all throughout high school as well. Like, I could see, like, history and charms and maybe Defense Against the Dark Arts being kind of, like, you still have to take them.
Yeah.
The last 2 years, but...
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. That is kind of weird. I mean, is there a minimum number of classes you still have to be taking? I feel like there has to be.
I feel like there has to be. Because, like, some people, even though they've, like, failed and don't get to go on to OWL level, like, or NAWT level, they, like, have to take, like, remedial stuff. So I don't really know. I don't understand.
Yeah. Or else, like, I mean, Ron does get kind of, like, called out for not having a super full schedule. But I don't even know how many classes he was taking at that point.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But in Defense Against the Dark Arts, this class is meant to teach students how to defend themselves from the dark arts, including, like, different creatures, different curses, hexes, jinxes, and even a little bit of dueling, which I think they teach mostly, like, the spells that you would use in dueling, because, like, they learn dueling etiquette in dueling club. I don't think that's something that is just, like, taught in Defense Against Dark Arts. Mm-hmm. I could be wrong because we see it in dueling club, so, like, maybe it was on the curriculum, but they just, like, did it in club. I'm not sure. And then there was also a note in the wiki, which I found, like, kind of, like, obvious, but also interesting. Defense Against the Dark Arts is most effectively taught when they are doing, like, the practical element in class and then, like, theory stuff outside of class, which I feel like is just kind of, like, a duh. But I think it is kind of the opposite of, like, standardized teaching, at least in America. It's like, in America, you do, like, your practice, as in your homework, like, outside of class. And in class, you learn, like, the different theories and you learn what you're going to be practicing. Which is kind of funny because the high school that I went to was opposite. Like, they switched it kind of like it's recommended for Defense Against the Dark Arts. Like, we had lesson videos that we watched at home for homework, and then we did, like, what would be considered, like, worksheets and homework in class with the teachers there. So I just thought that was kind of interesting because, like, the examples that they gave were, like, Umbridge was very, like, she only taught theory and did no practice, so I guess it's, like, kind of an extreme, but, like, they definitely did, like, Lupin and I think Snape did, like, practicing in class, writing papers outside of class, which just, like, makes more sense, specifically for, like, a magic school on Defense Against the Dark Arts.
Yeah, I'll talk a little bit more about that. I want to talk about professors, too.
Yeah. So then, speaking of 6th and 7th year, so you, while Harry was there, so I guess Snape's requirement for for Defense Against the Dark Arts was you had to have gotten an outstanding or an exceeds expectations, because he was the one teaching their 6th year. But did they
why is his bar lower for Defense Against the Dark Arts than potions?
Maybe when they switched, McGonagall was like, bro, you can't do that. I don't know.
Or, like, since he didn't teach their OWL level, they were like, okay, we gotta, like, at least this year we gotta accept.
Yeah.
Exceeds expectations.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts is, like, notoriously harder to get an O in than potions, you know? Because I don't think it's ever said that Harry got the only O, but we know that Hermione did not get an outstanding in Defense Against the Dark Arts. You're muted.
That's what I was just about to look up.
Oh, okay.
I muted myself so that I could type, but... okay. I feel like if Hermione didn't, then Harry probably was the only O.
Yeah. Which I'll talk about later. actually will talk about right now. I forgot where I put this note. So in their OWL, like some of the things we know that they had to do is in at least the time that the Marauders took it, like the written it portion of the Defense Against the Dark Arts OWL, they had to identify, like name five things that would identify a werewolf. I think in Harry's examination, he had to get rid of a Bugart. And then he also produced a Patronus, which he got extra points for, which I think is kind of BS, because we know at least, like, a good certain members of the, of Dumbledore's army could also produce a Patronus, but they weren't given that chance to get extra points. So, like, maybe if the examiner was like, hey, Hermione, can you do a Patronus? And she did it, she would have gotten an O. But just because Harry was, like, known to have been able, because, like, his examiner is the one that prompts him. He's like, hey, I've heard you can, like, produce a corporeal Patronus. And Harry's like, yeah, I want to see. And then he does that, and he's like, extra points for just Harry Potter, even though other kids in this room can do it.
But do you think he would have gotten O regardless? Like, do you think he had done, like, a perfect examination?
Yeah, I definitely think he would have gotten O regardless, but I feel like Hermione might have also been able to get an O if she had produced a Patronus.
I guess I kind of just wonder if he actually gave him extra points, or he just said that because he knew that, like, Harry already got an O.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But I feel like you should get extra points. But if you're going to give extra points for it, you need to give everybody the opportunity.
Right, and then it's not a standardized test. Like,
I guess. I don't know. You can get, like, I guess you can't get extra credit on standardized tests, but on tests you can.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. And then backtracking just a little bit, I'll talk about some of the books that are required for Defense Against the Dark Arts throughout the years. A Dark Forces, A Guide to Self-Protection by Quentin Trimble was what was on Harry's, like, first year list. Then The Complete Works of Gilderoy Lockhart. They were Break with a Banshee, Gadding with Ghouls, Holidays with Hags, Travels with Trolls, Voyages with Vampires, Wandering with Werewolves, and Year with the Yeti.
Is that, like, Katie's Trivia Corner?
Yeah, all of those books. I mean, it does make it kind of easy that they're all alliteration. That may help you remember them.
Yeah.
But yeah, you had to buy all of those for Lockhart. And I feel like, I have a feeling that these books weren't really textbooks. They were, like, memoirs. You know, like, each one was, like, just a recollection of that trip that Lockhart took. So I don't even know if they'd be super helpful as textbooks. So not only did they have a really bad professor, but they had terrible textbooks that year. The Essential Defense Against the Dark Arts by Arsenius Jigger. I wonder what the... Because I definitely know Arsenius Jigger is, like, an actual author, but that is credited to the film Prisoner of Azkaban.
We talked about Arsenius Jigger in the Potions episode. Because that, like, name is, like, you know, like, Jigger is, like, the, like, measuring for shots.
Yeah.
Okay, hang on.
So they must have just reused that name.
I'm going to see what he wrote in that.
Advanced Defense Against the Dark Arts by Galati Marathot. Okay, that's from the Crimes of Grindelwald screenplay. So I wonder, why would that be in the Crimes of Grindelwald screenplay? Oh, maybe that's what was, like, on the kids' desk when they were in the Defense Against the Dark Arts lesson with Dumbledore.
Okay, so Arsenius Jigger wrote Magical Drafts and Potions, which is, like, the potions, one of the potions textbooks you need for first year. So I think it must be on the... I assume it must be on the list in Sorcerer's Stone.
Yeah. Yeah, so Mina Lima must have just, like, recycled that name for a potions textbook. I guess
you could be, like... You could be a textbook writer for, like,
a
bunch of different subjects, like...
Yeah.
Especially if it's, like, beginner level.
Yeah. And then we have The Infamous Defensive Magical Theory by Wilbert Slinkhard. That's the book that Umbridge has as her textbook in Order of the Phoenix. And then Defense Against the Dark Art, Dark Arts Defense Basics for Beginners. Okay, that's from the Order of the Phoenix film. So I wonder if that's like a completely, they like changed the name of the book completely, or if that's like an additional book.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then Confronting the Faceless is credited to Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, Chapter 9.
Oh.
So I wonder if that's like a book that is just mentioned, or if it was the actual textbook like, that year.
Yeah, it could be like Hermione's reading it or something.
Yeah. Yeah, because I do have to say, in the wiki section for, like, the curriculum, they have, like, every DA, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts spell or, like, hex or whatever that's mentioned in that book, even though it wasn't, like, curriculum for that year. So that could be the case.
Okay.
Oh, and sorry, before I move on, Defense Against the Dark Arts classes took place on the first floor in the North Tower, is what it says. Oh, wait, it took place on the first floor in the North Tower on the third floor? What? This makes no sense. Okay, wait. Defense Against the Dark Arts classes took place on the first floor, comma, class 104 in the North Tower. Okay, and classrooms 3C on the third floor. I don't know where they're getting these designations for rooms, but
no, on the first like floor and the third floor. Yeah.
And this is like, there's like a dragon skeleton in the one that I think Lockhart, like the first, some of the first professor's rooms, I think. Yeah, and then I would go through the schedule, but again, like, I just don't really know how accurate these schedules are that they have on the wiki. But yeah. Oh, and they have Defense Against, Gryffindor has Defense Against Dark Arts with Slytherin, I think, right?
In
Goblet of Fire, movies, they definitely do.
Yes. In Prisoner of Azkaban, I think it's just Gryffindor.
Okay.
But in the movie, Slytherin is there.
Well, in the movie, all houses are always there. But yeah. Is it Slytherin in the books?
In Prisoner of Azkaban, I don't think so, because I think we, like, compared this with the Boggart scene when we did the book-to-movie comparison.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of...
It only mentions, because that's the one where you, like, I feel like get the most mention of other students and...
Trying to think back to, like, the Goblet of Fire, like, Unforgivable Curses lesson, if there was any mention of anybody else.
I actually don't really think so. I think it might just be
Gryffindor.
Yeah, I'm not sure, though.
Then Order of the Phoenix. Because, like, Dean talks at one point that he's in Gryffindor.
Yeah,
I don't know. It might just be Gryffindor, honestly. That's kind of weird.
Yeah. There's no real consistency to these.
Yeah. Things. I mean, we could also just be forgetting about students that are mentioned. It could just be like Ravenclaw, and just like no students are ever mentioned from Ravenclaw.
Yeah. Probably. Okay. So now on to professors, which usually I feel like this is just like not its own section, but obviously we have a lot of professors for Defense Against the Dark Arts. So Riddle jinxed the position after he, like, failed to get it for the second time. So he first applied immediately after he graduated from Hogwarts, and Dippet told him he was too young, but to come back in a few years. So he did come back, but at this point Dumbledore was headmaster, and we know that Dumbledore turned him away. And then after that, that is when it's rumored to have been cursed because after that, no one held the post for more than a year until after Voldemort had died. So, like, this is what I was going to say earlier. Do you think that it was, like, he did this just because, like, he was pissed and it was out of spite? Or do you think this was, like, a strategic choice that he was like, well, I'm going to, like, fuck with the education of people to defend against the dark arts because, like, I am the dark arts. Like, this will be beneficial to me taking over the war. Do you think he, like, thought that far in advance? Or do you think he was just like, no, Dumbledore won't give me this position. Like, no one's going to hold it for more than a year.
Okay, so to be honest, I never took it that literally. That, like, Voldemort did something to jinx the position. I always just thought, like, it was some, like, higher power. Kind of like, it's just like, oh, it's, like, cursed. You know, like, how we, like, sometimes say that, like, things are cursed here. Like, the only one I can think of at the top of my head is, like, the curse of the Kardashians and, like, their significant others never winning championships or, like, never being on good basketball teams. I don't know why that was the only thing I can think of. I kind of always just took it as, like, that, and I didn't take it super literally.
But it's set in a magical world.
I know. It makes sense. But I don't know. Like, I just... Dumbledore, Voldemort going out of his way to be like, nobody else can teach this position for more than 1 year because I can't, just, like, seems kind of ridiculous to me.
I don't know. That seems exactly like me.
I mean, yeah. I don't know. Because I feel like they always say, like, the position is jinxed, not, like, Voldemort jinxed it, you know?
Yes, but I think it is, like, I think it, at least the wiki says, and I think it's, like, mentioned at some point that, like, Dumbledore believes that, like, Voldemort jinxed it.
I mean, yeah, I definitely think that if we're, like, operating under the assumption that he, like, did something on purpose to jinx the position, then he did it out of spite. I don't think he was thinking that far ahead in advance. I think it probably worked out for him, maybe, yeah, in the long run, until Harry, like, I guess it really didn't work out for him. Because, like, yeah, he still lost in the end, and, like, Harry was really good at defense against the dark arts, even with terrible professors, so, like... Didn't really work out, but it could have worked out theoretically for him.
Okay. All right, so first up for Harry's professors, we have Quirrell, who was basically afraid of everything, but apparently was pretty smart. He mostly taught theoretical textbook stuff, and the ministry thought he was a good teacher, so...
That's all I need to know.
I feel like that, yeah, that kind of tells you who he wasn't. And we never see any classes. Harry always just mentions, like, it's like, oh, like, Quirrell taught us about whatever today, and he seemed afraid of it. Like, then we move on to Lockhart. The wiki describes him as, quote, fraudulent and incompetent, which I thought were some good words for him. Dumbledore only really hired him to expose him. So you could argue that Dumbledore did not have his students' best interest in mind.
Okay, I feel like I brought this up in the Lockhart episode. But also, like, at this point, it's been, like, 20 years, 15 years at the least, that he's gone through a professor a year. Like, he has to be running out of people at this point. Like,
yes,
there are probably... I think it's even mentioned that, like, Lockhart was almost really the only option. Like, he was the only person. I don't even know if he applied. But, like, he was the only person that, like, really showed interest. Because,
yeah,
again, he's gone through, like, minimum, like, 15 different professors in the past, yeah, 15 years. I guess I don't really remember when Dumbledore went back, but if we're, like, well, if Harry's 11 or 12, it, yeah, has it to had be a couple years been before that.
Before, yeah. So, as Katie mentioned earlier, Lockhart only really just talked about, like, things he quote unquote had done. And then they had that one practical lesson with the pixies, and it didn't go well, so they didn't do any more of that after. So then Lupin in Harry's third year, he was, like, definitely the student's favorite professor. His class time, like Katie mentioned, was mostly practical stuff, and it was also mostly, like, dark creatures. I'll talk about his curriculum later, but I feel like they, like, only really learned how to battle and do away with different dark creatures. Which I guess at that point in time makes sense. Like, they weren't, like, preparing for a war. Like, five is when they should have been, like, learning, like, how to defend yourself against, like, a dark wizard. But, obviously, other things are happening in five. And then their homework was theoretical. Like, they had to write a lot of essays and read the book and stuff. And then this is when, like, Harry really falls in love with Defense Against the Dark Arts. Like, I would say it's not his favorite subject until this year. I don't know what would be his favorite subject before that, but, like,
yeah,
he hated, or Quirrell, he was probably pretty indifferent too, but he hated Lockhart, so I don't think that it was his favorite class that year. And Lupin just, like, makes everybody love the subject, like the good teacher he is.
Yeah.
Then we have Barty Crouch Jr. disguised as Moody. He was, like, extremely practical. This was, I mean, Crouch wanted to test Harry in class and see what he was capable of. And then it also made sense for his, like, disguise as Moody, because Moody was all about, like, experience and, like, constant vigilance and facing, like, things to get better at it. So, like, it makes sense that he would be a practical teacher as well. He taught the Unforgivable Curses, which are supposed to be for year six, apparently. I don't know where that information comes from, but I think it might just be, like, mentioned when they first learn it.
Yeah, I think maybe, like, Fred or George or, like, Ron mentions it.
Yeah.
Like, we're not supposed to learn about that until 6 year or something like that.
Yeah, or, like, until NEWT or something.
Yeah,
Obviously, like, they did very advanced stuff, like, and then he was a harsh teacher, but I think the students, like, respected and feared him. And very effective, even though it would have been in Crouch's best interest for to be a less effective teacher.
Yeah. I think there's definitely some, like, there's some, like, backtracking that had to be done to, like, make the logic of his lessons make sense. Like, I do think that, like, some of it is fair, you know, like, wanting to test Harry, like, figuring out his skill level. But yeah, I don't know. It's a little sketch, I think, the logic.
Yeah. Then we have Umbridge, who, like, was obviously the worst. They were, like, instructed to put their wands away at the beginning of class. And also, the thing about it is, like, she didn't even lecture. Like, she didn't do anything. She just told them to read the book.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like if the ministry, like, wanted them to just, like, not do anything practical, she could have at least, like, pretended to be a teacher and lectured on what was in the book.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, that just sounds like my... I love reading. Like, don't get me wrong. But literally going to a class and just reading, like, chapter one just during that class time sounds literally awful.
That's like, it's like what you have to do sometimes when there's, like, a sub and they didn't like make you watch a movie or let you watch a movie.
Yeah.
So we know Hermione tries to get around that by reading the whole book in advance, but it doesn't really work out.
Yeah, and then what does Hermione do for the rest of the year? Just totally
She probably just rereads it.
Umbridge probably wouldn't even let you read, like, another book, too. She's like, no, you have to read this book.
And she, like, straight up admitted that she was just prepping them for their OWLs. That was the ministry's goal, was to get them to pass their OWLs. They didn't really care if you actually, like, knew how to defend yourself against the dark arts, because the dark arts aren't out there.
Which... there's, like, a practical element of the OWL. So, like, it's not even, like, without the DA, I wonder how they would have done.
Terribly.
Yeah, so it doesn't even make logical sense on their end either.
And I think, like, everyone but Harry, too. Like, I think, like, because if you think about it, like, Ron and Hermione at this point had not, like, faced any dark arts.
Yeah.
So, like... they didn't have any practical experience. So I think, like, everyone would have done terribly besides Harry.
Yeah. And I do think Harry prepping for the third task specifically helped him a lot as well, yeah. which none of the yeah. other kids obviously did.
Yeah, definitely. And then finally we have Snape. Oh, and I guess I didn't include... I guess Snape is Harry's final DADA professor, but... I think Amicus Caro is the one
yeah, in seven. The male I think it's Amicus. One, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah. But Snape was clearly obsessed with the dark arts, which, like, I think would have made him a good teacher of Defense Against the Dark Arts if he was, like, not himself.
Yeah.
You know? Like, the things preventing him from being a good teacher... were not, like, it wasn't his knowledge. So if he had, like, the other qualities of being a good teacher and he was, like, obsessed with the dark arts but wanted to teach people how to defend themselves, like, I think, like, having that, like, respect and, like, even, like, admiration of the dark arts is, like, could be a good way to teach, even though it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
And Hermione mentions and points out that Snape's approach was very similar to Harry's approach in DA. Like, to learn to react to a situation and not just memorize things. And, like, Harry also, well, it's very different than Snape. It's Harry also has that kind of respect for the dark arts. Or not, like, Snape has, like, an admiration, and I think Harry has a respect.
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're going to be teaching about the dark arts, I think it's good for you to have a, like, healthy and, like, a good knowledge base on, like, what you're up against. And I think sometimes, like, respect comes with that. It's, like, you understand, yeah. like, how dangerous it can be. So yeah. you need to learn how to, like, protect yourself against it. And I think having that, like, healthy, like, fear almost of it mm-hmm. is kind of, like, a respect in its own way.
Yeah. And so Snape also had practical lectures, theory for homework, which we see, I feel like you can pull out, like, there are three bad professors on a scale of, like, mediocre to not really doing any harm to, like, actively terrible.
Yeah.
Right. And then there's, like, three... I would say that Snape had the potential to be a good Defense Against the Dark Arts professor.
I agree.
So I say I would group him with, like, the two better... Like, he would go in the three better ones. Because, like, I think he could have been a very good professor, but he wasn't. Yeah, I would group Snape in with the better... professors.
I would as well.
But I think we've talked about this before, and I think, like, I believe Lupin was the best professor, and you believe
I kind Moody. Of always say Moody, yeah.
Yeah.
Because I do think that objectively Lupin was probably, like, a better professor, but I do think yeah. that Moody taught Harry more in, like, things that he used. Yeah. If that makes sense. Like, Harry never had to, like, face a Grindelow again or, like, a Hinky mm-hmm. Punk, you know? But, like, him being able to fight off the Imperius Curse, him, like, having a good understanding of how unforgivable curses work and, like, how to counteract them, quote-unquote, for some of them, I think, like, really ended up helping him more in the long run. But I do think that mm-hmm. Lupin was, like, the better teacher. If that yeah. makes sense.
And probably the better teacher for, like, all of the other students as well.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Because, like, I mentioned, like, they respected Moody as a professor. And he was effective. But they also, like, feared him. And some of his methods were maybe not the best to get the best, results out of his students, like
yeah.
Neville, for example.
Yeah.
Although yeah. he ends up, like, helping Neville with herbology, kind of.
Yeah. I do think it would be interesting if, like, Moody is such a hard character, because I would really love to be able to analyze how I think actual Moody would do as a professor, but I feel like I don't know enough about actual Moody to, like, mm-hmm. make the claim that, like, he would have taught the same exact way, you know?
Yeah. And it would have been really cool if, say, like, Moody was the professor their third year, and then, like, Barty Crouch Jr., like, was disguised as him their fourth year, you know? And yeah. if you could compare, like, back-to-back years, and, like, that would also be cool, because it'd be like, oh, you'd be like, oh, no, there's no Jinx, yeah, but also Jinx, it is a different person.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really cool. Because, like, from what we know about Moody, I feel like, and I feel like the fact that Dumbledore was never, like, suspicious about it, like, he claims, it's claim, I feel like they go back and backtrack that a little bit. I feel like Dumbledore's like, I've had my eye on him. It's like, yeah. Not me, really? But I do think the fact that nobody was really overly suspicious, I do think Moody would probably have been at least, at the bare minimum, like, very similar to how Barty Crouch taught. But I just don't know if I feel confident enough to be like, Moody would have been better than Barty Crouch, / Moody would have been worse than Barty Crouch. Because I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
Okay. Oh, wait. Do we want to say who? I guess, like, you said that you think Umbridge is obviously the worst. I think that Lockhart's the worst, but...
I think Umbridge is the worst because... Okay. Okay, they probably did actually learn more from Umbridge than they did from Lockhart. Like, they didn't actually learn it from Umbridge, but if they actually read the textbook.
Yeah.
But I think, like, contextually, like, at that age, regardless of, like, the time in history that they were living in, they should be learning a lot more than they did their second year. Yeah. And, like, because of that specific point in time, there was, like, such a need for them to learn, and she, like, failed more, you know, like,
yeah,
like, the bar for Lockhart was lower and he still failed it, but the bar for Umbridge was higher, and so there's, like, a bigger gap between what she did for them and what they needed to do. Does that make sense?
No, I agree. I definitely think Umbridge did more damage than Lockhart did, but I, in my opinion, I feel like Lockhart still was, like, an objectively worse teacher than Umbridge, because he didn't teach them anything.
But Umbridge didn't either.
I know, but, like, he talked about himself the whole time. Like, they actively didn't learn anything in that class. Like, at least she was like, read this textbook. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, the textbook was, I guess it was kind of also a fake textbook.
Depends on how many you think actually read the textbook.
Yeah, I don't know.
At least Hermione did.
I think that I definitely agree with you on the fact that, like, Umbridge definitely did more harm than Lockhart did in their bad teaching. But I don't know. It is hard because, like, they're so bad for such different reasons. And, like, Umbridge is kind of, like, maliciously bad. Like, she did it on purpose. Lockhart is, like, cluelessly bad.
Yes,
so that also comes into play. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, speaking of Lockhart, in a little bit, we're going to go through the curriculum. So, like Audrey mentioned, we never actually go to a Defense Against the Dark Arts class in Sorcerer's Stone. So we don't really know what they're learning. But there is the Curse of the Bogies that's mentioned in the book. I didn't go back and check, like, in what context it was mentioned. Like, I doubt it was mentioned in the context of Defense Against the Dark Arts, but I could be wrong.
Is the Curse of the Bogies, is that the Bat Bogie Hex or no?
I don't know. Because I feel like stuff in the first two books just, like, has different names.
Yeah, you're right.
So it could be the same thing. It could be something completely different. And then, this, like I said, speaking of Lockhart, in the second year we see at least two classes, I think. One where, like, they just take a quiz about Lockhart himself. And then one where they do the Cornish Pixies lesson, which Audrey already mentioned, kind of goes horribly, horribly wrong. And in Lockhart's books, so like if we believe that they read the books, or at least Lockhart talked about what was in the books, then like theoretically they learned about like banshees, ghouls, hags, trolls, vampires, werewolves, and yeti. Like the extent in which they actually learned stuff about those, I'm very doubtful, but like they maybe learned what one would look like. Maybe possible, and like they probably learned how quote unquote Lockhart like defeated it.
Yeah.
But just because they heard stories about quote unquote Lockhart defeating a troll, I don't think helps them actually defeat a troll. You know?
Well, Harry and Hermione and Ron had already done that at that point.
That is true. So they actually are more like Harry is already more qualified to defeat to teach Defense Against the Dark Arts than Lockhart.
So third year. So this is definitely the year that they, I feel like we probably see the most classes, and also maybe they learn the most like variety, or the biggest, range of things. Although all of the things that they learn this year do seem to be creatures. So I guess maybe it's like, there's a creature focus maybe in the third year curriculum, and then more of like a spell dark arts focus later on, which maybe makes sense. So they learn bog arts and ridiculous, which is how to remove the bog art. They learn about Grindylows and werewolves. Werewolves is taught to them by Snape, as we know. And then they learn about hinky punks, which I believe we've talked about on the podcast before, maybe in the, like, Care of Magical Creatures or something episode, but hinky punks are, like, this one-legged magical creature that kind of looks like a wisp of smoke, and it, like, lures travelers off of their paths at night into treacherous bogs or wetlands, and, yeah, they, like, then, I guess, kill the traveler in that area. So I guess the way you learn to, like, learn about them, learn to avoid them, like, learn to not follow them. And then we have kappas, and a kappa is a Japanese water demon that feeds off human blood, and they were known for strangling humans that invaded their shallow ponds. Great. red caps are small, dwarf-like magical beasts that inhabited wherever human blood had been shed. So they live in, like, dungeons, battlefields, and, like, underground. And then they also learn about vampires. So, yeah, a whole range of, like, magical beasts, beings, creatures. Lupin taught them how to defend themselves and, like, avoid dying at those hands. And then in fourth year, like I was saying earlier, we only really see them learn about the unforgivable curses, so the Cruciatus Curse, the Imperius Curse, and the Killing Curse, and they learn about resistance to these curses, or I guess specifically resistance to the Imperius Curse. They spend, like, many lessons, I think, with Moody, basically, like, testing if they can resist the Imperius Curse, which just taught Harry how to resist it.
Yeah.
And they learn, apparently they also learn about counter curses, and they learn hex deflection, which I don't know if this is just, like, Protego, but it's mentioned, I think, that there's, like, a lesson where they're learning hex deflection, and Moody hits Harry with the twitchy ears hex, because Harry does not deflect it correctly, so, like, Harry mentions that his ears were twitching the whole time after that class.
That sounds awful.
Yeah, so that's, like, fourth year was a lot more, like, curses and, like, I guess, like, things you would face in, like, a battle or, like, from another wizard, whereas third year was a lot more creature-oriented.
Yeah. Okay, so then in fifth year, we've kind of talked about this, but Umbridge really didn't teach them anything in class. All they did was read the textbook on, like, theory. They learned, like, theoretically, I don't even think it was, like, theoretically what would you do in this situation. They learn, like, the magical theory behind defensive spells, I think. Mm-hmm. And so they learn everything in the DA, which Audrey will talk about later. So I'm not going to talk about what they learned then. And then in sixth year, Snape focuses a lot on nonverbal spells, or at least that's what we hear about the most. I think we see a lesson in which they learn this. And then we also see, like, at least one or two times, like, them practicing outside of class nonverbal spells. And then at one point they also talk about Inferi, which I'm not sure if it's, like, technically on, like, the curriculum for that year, or if it's because, like, I think, like, Dean or Seamus or somebody asks about them in class because they were mentioned in, like, the pamphlets that the ministry was putting out, like, trying to help keep people safe. And so I think it, like, somebody asked about Inferi and Snape talked about it, but then I'm also not sure if, like, that he was going to teach that anyway, or if it was just him talking about that because somebody asked him.
Yeah.
But that's kind of all of the stuff that I found, like, from the actual book for sixth year.
Yeah, I feel like for sixth year, they just spent a lot of time, like, doing things they've already learned but nonverbal.
Yeah, it's so, like, they mention, like, a couple other, like, jinxes, like the shield charm. I'm like, okay, they already know how to actually do Protego. It's like they're just learning that nonverbally.
Yeah. Okay, so, like Katie mentioned, I'm going to talk a bit about Dumbledore's army. So I thought I would, like, you know, find all the things they've learned, and, like, that's kind of the curriculum, but it's not, like, super well covered. I feel like they mention, like, a few of the things, and then it's like, oh, and they do a bunch of other hexes and stuff. So, like, the first lesson they learn, Expelliarmus, we know that because Zacharias Smith is, like, really condescending about it. And then they do the impediment jinx, which is, like, what you can use to slow down your opponent. The reductor curse, or reducto, which I think Jenny's supposed to be really good at. And then they learn the stunning spell, stupefy. And then before Christmas break, they just do a bunch of other stuff. I think just, like, various things you would use in battle, like, probably, like, bat bogey hex. Like, what's the one that makes your legs, like, jelly, like... Jelly legs, jinx or something.
Or curse or something like that.
Probably, like, body bind. Those kind of things. And then they review the shield charm again. And the Patronus charm is, like, I think the last thing that they get to. And definitely, like, the most difficult out of all of those. But a lot of it is basically just, like, going back to the basics. Because there is, like, a range of students there. So then I was, like, poking around on the internet, and I found this Screen Rant article, which, like, not always the best resource, but it was, like, 10 things that Harry should have taught in Dumbledore's army, which some of these, most of these, I feel like Harry wasn't, like, qualified to teach. Like, I don't know that he even really knew how to do them at this point, so I'm just gonna run through these, so... It counts down 10 to 1. So number 10 is Obliviate, which I don't think Harry knew how to do.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I mean, we see him not do it in 7, so...
Yeah, like Hermione does it, right?
Yeah.
9 is Episky, which is like a healing spell, which we know that Harry didn't know how to do because he mentions at the beginning of 7, like, wow, I wish Hermione had taught me more about healing spells.
Yeah. Maybe Hermione should, like, have overtaken a class, like, once a month and been like, okay, we're going to do what I can do now.
8 is Finite Incantatum, which...
I don't really understand the practical use of that spell.
I don't either. I feel like it's for, like... It's not for, like, defending yourself.
No, it's for, like, proving somebody did something, right? Because isn't it just, like, the last
spell? That's priori.
Okay.
The Nite Incantatum is, like, when the, like, rain is going on in the office in the ministry. It, like, stops the spell. But I don't think you can use it, like, in a duel. Like, I think it's, like...
Well, unless, like, you get, like, the Bat Bodhi hex or, like, the jelly legs, then you could probably, like, use it. But, instead of just waiting for it to wear off. I feel like that's a spell they should just, like, know already through school.
It's not really, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts. It's just, like, you should know that.
Yeah.
Seven is Incarcerous, which, like, it puts you, ties you up in ropes, which I don't know if that's even, like, a book spell.
I think it might be. But six. Also, like, if you know Petrificus Totalis, then it doesn't, then you don't need to do Incarcerus.
Yeah, that's true. Six is Obscurus, which apparently, like, alters, like, it kind of, like, blindfolds the opponent.
Yeah.
Five is...
Oh, I think that's one we see in the books, too.
Yeah. Five is similar. It's the Disillusionment Charm, which you, like, it, like, allows the... caster to blend in with the surroundings. And I think Dumbledore uses that, like, on Harry.
I think Moody uses does. It on Harry in 5 when they're leaving the Privet Drive. But I definitely don't think Harry knew how to do that one either.
No, he didn't. A lot of these. 4 is Legilimens, which, like, I feel like they mean Occlumency.
Yeah.
Because that would be the defense one. And Harry obviously was not very good at this.
Yeah, I also feel like that is kind of like a low risk one for everybody but Harry. You know?
Yeah. 3 is Evanesco, the vanishing spell, which is not like Defense Against the Dark Arts in my mind.
Yeah, no.
It's Transfiguration.
Because I don't think you can use it like on a person.
I'm pretty sure they learn it in Transfiguration, like, that year.
And I know, like, I think Snape uses it a bunch to, like, clear out, like, cauldrons.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Okay, and 2 and 1 are the controversial ones.
Ooh.
2 is Imperio.
I was going to say, are they Crucio? Okay, Harry didn't know how to do those, as we see at the end of 5.
And, like, you can't, like, be taught how to do those.
No, it's all about feeling. And, like, feeling.
You can't practice doing those.
Yeah. No,
especially if you
not.
Don't know what you're doing.
Yeah. I think that, like, theoretically, it would be great for them to, like, learn how to fight the Imperius curse and the Cruciatus curse to, like, some extent. But I don't think, number one, Harry didn't know how to cast those, so they couldn't practice. And I don't think it would be very, like, ethical.
No.
For, like, somebody who's not super skilled, like, a bunch in of casting
teenagers
those.
Just doing
it. Yeah, no.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, it's also illegal.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I guess probably the DA was, like, technically illegal at this point, but.
Yeah. Whatever. Okay, so then the other thing I found when I was poking around the internet is this video from Harry Potter Theory on YouTube that ranked the 6 most powerful members of the DA. And it's, like, supposed to be during the period that the DA was active, like, their power.
Yeah.
So 6 was Luna. I'm going to run through these and then we'll debate.
Yeah.
6 was Luna. 5 was Ron. 4 was Ginny. 3 goes to Fred and George as one person. 2 goes to Hermione. 1 goes to Harry. I don't think that you can argue 1 and 2.
I don't think so either. And I do think that it would be, like, kind of a common argument for Fred and George to be moved down. But I also think it's important to mention, like, how much older they are.
Yes.
So I do think that they are probably, like, they have just... like, they have just learned more at this point.
Yeah.
So I'm fine with Fred and George at 3, honestly, in comparison to the other people we have on this list. I think I'm fine with this list, in all honesty.
I think I'm fine. I don't know. I guess I don't really know if, like, Luna belongs there. I don't know if, like, maybe,
like,
Dean
Neville
was, like, better. Well, Neville was, like, this
he
is, like, when
so
the DA.
Yeah.
He was, like, better in 97. But if we're talking about, like, when the DA was, like...
Yeah.
But I don't know if, like, maybe Dean was actually, like, a better wizard than Luna
we just
was.
Don't
but,
see
like,
him
circumstantially,
as much.
Luna ends up in things, you know? Like,
yeah.
I can't speak to that.
Yeah.
Because we don't, like, really see.
Yeah, that's why I think, like, of the people that are already on this list, I'm fine with this order. I could also, like, if we had more information and you told me that, like, Dean was actually, like, 5 and Ron was 6, I'd be like, yeah, checks out. Like,
Yeah.
I don't know.
I do think, as far as the, like, Harry being first and Hermione being second, I think that it's important to, like, this is a power thing. So I don't think, I think it's, like, who's the best at, like, Defense Against the Dark Arts? Who's the best at, like, dueling, facing a situation?
Yeah.
Like, Harry is. I think Hermione is the better, like, witch.
Yeah.
Wizard, you know, than Harry is. But, like, power as opposed to, like,
knowledge.
Knowledge or even, like, not just knowledge because it's also application.
Yeah.
But, like, power versus being just, like, a better at magic.
Yeah. I agree. I think that, like, if somebody made, like, a really compelling argument to me that, like, I don't know, I feel like I could buy Hermione being one, Harry being two, or Harry being one and Hermione being two, and, like, I don't really have a problem with either of those.
Yeah.
In my opinion. I do think that there, like, definitely are certain situations where, like, Harry is the better person, and then, like, Hermione's other situations when Hermione's the better person, just kind of, like, we were talking about, like, Harry is the better person to teach a Patronus lesson, but Hermione is the better person to teach, like, an Obliviate lesson, you know?
Yeah.
It's just kind of, they are just so different, but I'd say that their skill levels, like, are pretty on par, and I do think if we're definitely taking this through, like, a Defense Against the Dark Arts, like, teaching people how to handle things on their feet lens, then Harry's definitely better.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that's something that, like, you can tell Hermione learns a lot from Harry.
Yeah.
In the DA by, like, the way she performs magic in Deathly Hallows compared to maybe what she did previously, where it's, like, she still has all of that, like, background knowledge and, like, foresight to, like, you know, put up the shield charms and everything, but, like, she also learns to, like, be able to act in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think she, I almost think, like, Hermione ends up learning more from Harry than Harry ever learns from Hermione, because Hermione never, like, teaches Harry things. Like, she kind of always just, like, does them for him.
You know, except, like, for, like, incense preparation for the Triwizard Tournament.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. But, like, even then, like, Hermione, they use, like, textbooks a lot for that, and I'm not saying that they don't use textbooks for the DA, but, like, I don't know. I feel like Hermione never really teaches other people her skills, because I feel like her main skill is just kind of, like, knowing everything. Like, you can't really teach somebody that and, like, her brain.
I would maybe argue that Harry relies on Hermione more.
Yeah, for sure.
But Hermione potentially learned more from Harry.
Yeah, I think that's, like, kind of what I was trying to say. Like,
yeah.
Harry uses Hermione a lot more than, like, Hermione uses Harry, but Hermione learned more from Harry.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. We're on the same page.
Very complimentary styles, though.
Yes, very much so. Because I think, like, Harry is totally fine having Hermione, like, take control over things.
Yeah.
Where I feel like some, specifically, like, men might not be so comfortable with, like, a woman, like, like, no, I got this. Like, yeah. I'm the better person in this situation. I think, like, honestly, both Harry and Ron are fair, like, are good at that.
Yeah, they do both, know that, like, really respect, like, Hermione and, like, her. Yeah.
Yeah.
They know they wouldn't survive with
that. Yeah, they even say that.
Yeah.
And then when Ron is like, Hermione, like, you're the best at spells, like, you do the Obliviate. I think, like, you can definitely tell that they both, like, really respect her. Which I really like.
Which, like, how could they not, honestly, after all those years? But
yeah. It did take some time, you know, cut to the beginning of Sorcerer's Stone. Maybe not so much, but yeah.
Hi, I'm Ryan Howard.
And I'm Brady Jungle.
And we're the hosts of Out of Contracts, a show where we watch and talk about a random episode of Star Trek every other Sunday.
For each podcast, we've used a random number generator to select an episode of any of the Star Trek series. And then we talk about the story of the episode, what the writers hope to accomplish, and how the episode fits into the larger tapestry of Star Trek as a whole.
The thing is, though, that each of us has only seen about a third of the Star Trek episodes in existence, which means that sometimes I'll watch a late period Deep Space Nine episode and have no idea what's going on. It's fun!
So, if you've ever wondered about the logistics of love on the holodeck,
or what it would really look like if all the water got sucked out of your body,
then listen to Out of Contracts every other Sunday at outofcontracts.podbean.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Okay, so for our pop quiz today, I'm very excited. We got an email like right after we were right after we recorded, I think the last time, wasn't it like the later that day or something?
Yeah, I think it was.
So we got an email from Lena in Austria. Thank you so much for reaching out. I loved your email. It like made my day. And you sent us some pop quiz question ideas, so we're gonna use one in this episode. And it is, what is your favorite location in the series? Like, what is your favorite setting?
Yeah, so we got a bunch of responses on the Facebook group.
Yeah.
So I'll run through those. Linda said the unpopulated areas when they were on the run in Deathly Hallows Part 1, which we mentioned in our last episode. Like, they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Leia said Hogsmeade always feels straight out of a Christmas card.
Mm.
Morgan also said Hogsmeade. Anne said the Burrow. Jacine said the Room of Requirement. Taryn said Diagon Alley. I like to shop. I think it would be fun to stay at the Leaky Cauldron for a few nights and explore. I agree. There's like so, like Diagon Alley is so much to explore.
Yeah.
And then Michael said probably Hogsmeade, but I think a lot of that is influenced by the other Hogsmeade in Orlando, which is definitely his favorite between the two places. And he said, I certainly love the Great Hall quite a bit, especially when decorated with Halloween or Christmas decorations. I agree. A lot of these are like kind of contextual to like the decorations and like, you know, specific events. I didn't think a ton about this. So my like go-to answer to this question is always, it's always the library, because I think if that's where, if I went to Hogwarts, that's where I would like want to spend a ton of time, and that's like I'd be so fascinated by it. But I don't know if that's like my favorite location that like they go to in the series.
I think they are like, I think that's a different question.
I guess then, like, I guess, like, the Burrow would have to be up there as far as, like, somewhere that I would want to just go and live, you know?
Yeah.
And I love, like, when they're staying. Like, I love all of the, like, Christmas times and, like, in the summer when they're staying at the Burrow and it's just, like, nice, like, happy, like...
Yeah.
They're just, like, hanging out. So I guess maybe that's, like, my favorite, like, setting as far as like a setting in the book.
Yeah, I definitely do think I have two answers as well. I think that my favorite place if I were to go to Hogwarts would probably be my common room. Mm-hmm. I could definitely like see me like hanging out there all the time. And then as like a setting in this series, one of my favorite parts of like any book is when Harry's just like bopping around in Diagon Alley at the beginning of Prisoner of Azkaban. I know I've like talked about this before, but like when he goes to like Florian Fortescue's and he just like gets ice cream and Florian talks to him about like history of magic, I love that so much. So I do think I have to agree with who said Diagon Alley. Was it Leia? Am I making that up?
Oh, I just
Taryn.
Taryn, yeah.
Leia said Hogsmeade. I do think that I do have to agree with you that Diagon Alley would probably be one of my favorite, is one of my favorite settings.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, that was a good question. So thank you, Lena, for sending that in all the way from Austria. It always blows my mind that we, like, touch people in different parts of the world.
Yeah, it is crazy.
Okay, so you can find our episodes every other Tuesday on your podcast platform of choice. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, or even if you don't, head on over to Apple Podcasts and please give us a rating for 5 stars, all of the stars, and leave a review and let us know how much you love us.
Yeah. You can find us on social media. We are Wizard Studies Podcast on Facebook and Instagram, and then Wizard Studies on Twitter. You can join our Facebook group at Wizard Studies Podcast Group. You can email us at withrootsstudiespodcast@gmail.com. And if you want to become a patron of ours, you can find us at patreon.com/wizardstudies.
Cool. As always, thank you so much for listening. And remember, just do your best. We'll do the rest.
And learn until our brains all rot.